Okay, I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and we do have a quorum present. Representative Olson?
I move the minutes of March 5th.
Okay, the motion is before us to approve the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. We have the first bill of the morning is House File 50 by Representative Hornstein. It deals with the cell phone use while driving a motor vehicle. And Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm proud to, first of all, let's move this bill. I would move that House File 50 as amended be...
It came out of your division, so we need to move the division report first.
Sorry. Let me...
Is that where it came from? Oh, and it came from Judiciary Finance, Representative Hornstein. It came from your committee, and it went to apparently to Judiciary Finance, so we need
Correct. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would move that House File 50, as amended previously, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay. Representative Hornstein moves the adoption of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Division report on House File 50. That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hornstein, if now to move the bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is a ban on the...
Representative Hornstein, you need to move the bill now.
Okay.
We adopted...
You adopted the committee.
Procedurally...
I'm so anxious to get this thing.
It's early on a Monday morning.
I'd like to
mid-morning, I guess,
move but, House File 50 and have it placed on the general register.
And that would be, and you want to include as amended in...
As amended in previous committee.
Okay,
but not yet in this committee.
Okay.
On a Monday.
Representative Hornstein moves House File 50 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. Okay, Representative Hornstein, now the bill.
And with that, does the committee have any questions? No, I'm joking. No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair members. This is the bill that has been around the legislature for several years. It prohibits the use of handheld devices while driving. This bill is an effort to address the growing problem of distracted driving on our roadways. We have had an average of about 50 deaths due to distracted driving in recent years and over 200 injuries in the state of Minnesota. We know that this type of legislation works. In 12 of 15 states that have passed hands-free, we've seen fatalities decrease an average of 16% within 2 years. And Georgia, the most recent state to pass hands-free, has seen a 7% decrease in fatalities. Basically, this bill allows a wireless communications device or a cell phone and related functions in a voice-activated or other hands-free mode, so this isn't an entire ban on the use of cell phones, just in a hands-free mode. And so it's either through a device feature, headset, or other accessories. It allows cell phone calls or functions made with a voice or one-touch activation, and it matches current federal requirements for commercial vehicle operators. It allows hands-free cell phone use. We have had many questions about what is allowed under this bill. So if you want to obtain emergency assistance, that is allowed in the event of immediate life or safety threat or danger, and in an authorized emergency vehicle while in the performance of official duties. And members, we also have a study concerning traffic stops in this bill, which was amended in public safety and then further refined in judiciary. And that came as a result of some concerns that were raised by members of the public safety committee related to profiling. And so we have addressed that concern in this bill. So I'm happy to take questions, and I look forward to the discussion.
Okay. I see Representative Drazkowski would like to be recognized, but my intent was there's a by Representative Torkelson an amendment in the package, so I thought I would take the amendment next, if that's all right, Representative Drazkowski, and then after we dispose of the amendment one way or the other, we'll recognize you first. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you.
Your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A9 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us, if you'd care to explain the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. After this bill left transportation, a study has been added, a study that I believe is really goes well beyond the scope of this bill and really is not directly related to the purpose of this bill. And is the study itself is very broad and does take another chunk of money out of the general fund unnecessarily. It goes back to review any significant changes in traffic laws since 2003. That's a long period of time. I'm sure there have been, I don't know how many changes there have been in traffic laws, and I don't know who's going to define which of those are significant changes, but some of them have to do that. I already mentioned the cost of this of $250,000. It's going to collect data, but we don't really know what data necessarily. It says in the bill that the section does not require law enforcement agency to collect any additional data, but yet if they're not collecting additional data, what? I don't understand how they can have an effective study without collecting additional data somehow, whether it's with or without the agreement of law enforcement. Are they tracking data on geographic and demographic information related to the driver? That, to me, Mr. Chair, is just a wide-open permission to collect any information from that driver and compare it to what we don't really know. You know, what is relevant data on geography? I'm not sure what exactly that might mean if you're going to go neighborhood by neighborhood or county by county or just how that works, and as far as the driver, relevant driver demographics, what really constitute a relevant demographic, we don't know. It's not defined in this study what relevant driver demographics really are or should be. Once this data is collected, it doesn't really tell us who will have access to it, how it will be stored, or how it's going to be protected. It also references a 2001 study, and I guess I would ask the author, what was this 2001 study that we are comparing the new data to?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ferguson, I'd be happy to answer all of your questions. We also have one of the authors of that study in the audience as well, if I can't answer your concerns. First of all, so to the first question about why is there a nexus between the study and the bill? We've had so the specific changes that we're talking about are since 2003. We have had the .08 issue. We have had primary seatbelt. We have had the texting law, and we have had potentially this law if it's passed. So those are the four issues. So it is confined to those issues. That's stated in the amendment. And the reason to do this study is that the legislature already approved a similar study, and a study was undertaken in pretty much during the calendar year of 2002. So the 2001 legislature and the Minnesota House of Representatives, when Representative Spigen was speaker, authorized a traffic study of this kind, and so we're simply updating it because we've had some different changes that have taken place. This law, of course, is amending and updating the texting law. So we've had texting, we have potentially this law, and we've had these two other additional traffic safety laws that have been passed. So we're simply updating a study that the legislature has previously authorized, including its parameters and the specifics of that study. So we have, in terms of the data that you're referring to, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, Law enforcement does collect data already, particularly in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. There may be some other municipalities as well, so we're going to look at that existing data and see if some of these changes that the legislature has enacted have resulted in increased or decreased profiling. Perhaps it stayed the same. We don't know. But these are some of the questions that the Public Safety Committee wanted to see answered.
Representative Torgerson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for that answer. And as far as what data is going to be collected, it does list the four categories you mentioned, but it also says including but not limited to. So the scope of this could go well beyond those four categories. I really feel this bill should be about safety and reducing distracted driving. If there is a study needed, perhaps we should look at that in a separate bill where we can actually analyze the details of the study and how it might work, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Hertoff. Representative Druskowski, was your comments going to be on the amendment or on the bill? Okay, Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was not about the amendment. Did you want to wait?
So we'll keep you on the list then,
yes,
right after Representative Druskowski. Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated. We now have the bill before us. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. Just curious, do the prohibitions extended in this bill extend to law enforcement as well?
I believe they do not, but I have Mr. Austin from the Minnesota Safety Council can confirm that.
And Mr. Austin, if, once you sit down, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Austin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Safety Council. We're a supporter on this bill. The exceptions that allow law enforcement to continue to use their devices, all their devices as they currently do, is included in this bill. It carries forward that same exception that was granted in the texting law itself. So law enforcement's operation of their phones and their MDTs and their radios is not subject to this bill.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Austin. So we have a bill that treats different people differently, of course. I would suspect that the reaction time and behavior of law enforcement people is very similar to or exactly the same as the rest of the population. So really, I think, a weakness, Representative Hornstein, in the bill. But I have one other question, and that is on lines 2.16 and 2.17 of the bill. Using includes but is not limited to holding wireless communication, a wireless communications device. What does holding mean? Does it mean, so if the device is in my hand and a text message happens to come across it, even though I'm not looking at it or putting it to my ear or anything else, am I in violation for simply holding that device in my hand?
Mr. Austin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, 2.16 and 2.17 essentially ask you to not have that phone in your hand while you're in the vehicle.
Wait, Mr. Chair?
Representative Druskowski.
So, Mr. Austin, law here doesn't ask people what to do. It tells them what they have to do. And, Mr. Austin, so I'm curious whether if this is enacted into law, will someone who's simply holding a device in their hand but not looking at it or putting it to their ear and a text message happens to come across that device at that time, are they in violation and are they in a position to be cited for the penalties in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, in my opinion, the answer is yes. And you have to remember that this bill is not aimed solely at texting. It's at voice communications. It's people who are live streaming, who are FaceTiming, who are watching movies on their phone. It's more than simply the act of getting a text message. And so this as defined, does say that you should not be driving with the phone in your hand.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scouse.
Thank you. And Mr. Austin or Representative Hornstein. So the answer is yes. If it's in their hand and there happens to be a video or a text message or anything else that's cited in this bill that happens to come across it, even though they're not looking at the phone or having it to their ear, they're in violation. So what if the phone is in their pocket? Are they holding it according to this bill, and are they in violation, too, for having the phone in their pocket when a text message, a video, or any other prohibition in the bill happens to come across it?
I've been addressing you as Mr. Austin, and it's Mr.
Austin.
Austin.
That's fine.
Okay. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, if it's in your pocket, it's my interpretation that it is not subject to this bill. We'd have to ask law enforcement to move further into that interpretation. I'd also like to point out that there's other sections of law that apply to inattentive driving, and there is a crossover between essentially bills like this and inattentive driving. So if I'm not paying attention to my driving and I'm eating a sandwich or I'm doing something else that's not related to a electronic device, there is also that section of law that's also available and applicable.
So thank you. Last question, Mr. Chair, or maybe just a comment. Mr. Austin, sorry about that. So it seems, Mr. Austin and Representative Hornstein, that there is a weakness in the bill and not a clear definition of what holding means for the people of this state. If this is enacted into law, I think we need to be very clear what it is and what behavior of the person in the car puts that person in violation going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, as I've read through the text of the bill itself and with respect to the use of cell phones in a non-hands-free type of operation, I was thinking about situations as it might apply to myself. I own a number of vehicles more than there are drivers, less than the number of boats that I own. But nonetheless, not all of them are new and do not have these modern features. I've got a couple vehicles where you can touch a button on a steering wheel and you can call a phone number, or even if you get an incoming text, it will display on the screen without having to be distracted with your phone. But what bothers me more, the way the language of the bill is written, oftentimes in some of these vehicles where I'm accompanied by someone, most often my wife, a text message will come in or something, and I will hand her my phone, and I will say, read this message to me. And so she reads the message to me, and I will dictate a reply to text back. So she's doing it for me while I'm driving and paying attention to the road. What concerns me is if during one of these events I should be involved in an accident, law enforcement will most likely summons that phone to see whether or not any transmissions have been coming from it. How do we fix that problem structurally in having the driver have some immunity with regard to not violating the law? I think the way the bill is written, that would be a culpable piece of evidence that would suggest that I was doing something I was not, and that bothers me the way the bill is written.
Is that directed to Mr. Austin?
Or either one.
Whoever would like to take it.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, thank you, Representative Hertas. I mean, you're doing the right thing by having your wife be engaged with the device and having you with two hands on the wheel and keeping your eyes focused there. My initial reaction, and I think maybe Mr. Austin can help me out here, but as long as you're not holding the phone, I think that's really the bottom line here. If your wife is holding the phone, but it's your phone, I don't see an issue with that, but maybe Mr. Austin can clarify.
Mr. Austin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, I agree with what Representative Hornstein just said. Thank you for doing the right thing. I think one thing that we'd like to underline under this whole discussion is this bill is not designed to give everybody carte blanche to use their phone. The goal is still under the header of, if you must use your phone, please use it in this way to be in compliance with the law. So you are exhibiting a good example of how you manage around the if you must use your phone in that situation. Number two, I'm speaking from old experience with time in public safety year in the 90s, but, you know, a law enforcement officer would have to have probable cause to believe that you were the distracted entity in that crash before the chain of even starting to talk about who was actually holding that phone in their hands would occur. So I think at that point, it's not much different than if a law enforcement officer suspected that you actually had it in your hand and you were alone, and it becomes a conversation then in a legal sense around proving or disproving, you know, who was doing what. And the burden of proof is on the law enforcement and the prosecutorial side of that equation. So where your scenario could come true, I think there would be an interesting legal conversation about, you know, your testimony and your wife's testimony versus someone from outside the car's testimony about who was actually holding the phone, much less getting into analysis of fingerprints on the phone or something along that order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one other related question on this same issue. I'm part of a trade or industry that your vehicle is your office. And, you know, in the DWI laws, if an individual has the key in the ignition and are engaged with law enforcement, even though the vehicle is parked and it's not running, or if it's over on the side of the road, that's deemed to be operating the vehicle. Now, oftentimes in the construction trades, we're out in the street where we literally carry a file cabinet, if you will, as such, on your front seat. You have different jobs, different stuff going on. You're using your vehicle as an office. You're not necessarily moving, but your key is in the ignition. Maybe you're parked in front of a fire hydrant, and law enforcement comes along and sees you on your phone with the key in the ignition. Is there anything in this bill that prohibits somebody from pulling over to the side of the road to make a call and leave the car running? A couple weeks ago, we had 35 below outside. I don't think anybody wants to turn their vehicle off, but the right thing to do is to not be in traffic. But I don't know that it addresses this issue either of being pulled over or in the operation of a vehicle but not moving. What do we have in language that's going to protect those individuals from unjust prosecution?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hertas. I believe your question is addressed in 2.13 through 2.15, and so if the vehicle is not in motion and is in a location that's not ordinarily used for vehicular travel, it's not obstructing traffic, then I think you're in good shape here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. In closing, I think with regard to my prior issue, I would like to see some language that makes sure that this issue is addressed if somebody else in the vehicle is operating your phone and returning messages, even though you're dictating it. I'd like to see some safeguards for individuals that are doing the right thing but aren't going to be punitively punished for the fact that it was their phone.
Hey, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I was contacted by two constituents that both have difficulty hearing. In one ear, they are completely deaf. And they said that and maybe this has been addressed in another committee, but they said that they can't use the Bluetooth that comes through their car because they just can't hear. It's you know, it's just they can't comprehend what is being said. And so I don't know if you've entertained any thought to making exceptions for people that just cannot hear or not. They have no other recourse but to hold it up to their ear in order to be able to hear a phone conversation at all. So somebody that has that disability, I don't know if you would entertain looking at exceptions for them.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, Representative Garofalo had raised a similar issue with us, and he had a constituent as well. And I believe there's some kind of app that that is used in this context that would be allowed under the bill. But I'll have Mr. Austin take a crack at that.
Mr. Austin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, the issue that Representative Garofalo raised had two facets to it. One was the control of a hearing aid via an app on your iPhone, and largely to adjust the volume of that hearing aid on the iPhone or an Android smartphone while you're in the vehicle. We believe that can be successfully done in a one-touch mode. So controlling the hearing aid, managing it, unless you're making some sort of intricate equalizer adjustment or you're pairing it to your ear between your phone and your hearing aid, it would be possible to do that and be in compliance with the one-touch voice activation requirements of House File 50. The second issue had to do with using the hearing aid itself as a Bluetooth hearing device or to actually run the phone through the hearing aid itself. And for the hearing aids that do pair up to iPhones, it would be used just like you would use an earbud or another device in your vehicle. If somebody has an older hearing aid that does not interact in that way, I don't know that there's a ready solution to that situation that you're talking about. I think there's the other constraint that's worth considering is that when we allow people to use headphones in cars, we only allow them to use one, because the goal is that you need to have an ear available to listen to what's going on with your vehicle and in traffic around you. We kind of have a double up on that situation if someone has a hearing aid and an ear that is working better than the other, and then they're listening to their phone on top of that. I think that would move into that area of inattentive driving under other sections of statutes. It's in 169, and I don't think that's addressed directly here.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, two people that I talked to don't wear hearing aids. They just have this, and I don't know why, but they can't hear out of one ear, and it sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher, you know, when it comes over their Bluetooth in their car, so they can't decipher anything. So I just think that, you know, maybe we need to be looking at some exceptions for people with a disability like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Relative to the fiscal note, I don't see where there's any local impact. Is that correct?
Representative Hornstein.
That's my understanding. Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, that's my understanding.
And Representative Vogel, I requested, being that this is the Ways and Means Committee, that Mr. Lee give us an update on the fiscal note. It's fine that we're discussing a variety of issues, but remember, one of the reasons that the bill is here is that it does have a fiscal impact. So go ahead and ask your question, but we may want to have Mr. Lee come down perhaps to answer the question that you have and or to just give us a brief overview of the fiscal note. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that would be my first question is there no local impact?
Either Representative Hornstein or Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. So if you look on page 5 and 6 of the fiscal note, this is the impact and assumptions for the Supreme Court. So there is the local impact would depend on if local agencies, how many like local police are citing people that would fall under this bill. If it's state patrol, then some of the fee revenue goes to the trunk highway fund. If it's local police, then there's a flow of how much goes to, say, county law library or general fund. And the assumptions are explained in the paragraphs at the bottom of page 5.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did see that. I guess I was thinking about the training or whatever that may have to be done at the local level or any of the public outreach, such as the state, just making sure that we're covering all bases.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, the fiscal note doesn't address training. However, I'll draw your attention to page 8, 9, and 10 of the fiscal note. This is the Department of Public Safety side. So you'll see on the front page of the public safety fiscal note the $250,000 for the study. But there's also, if you look on page 9, revenue in from federal government and expenditures for public awareness and advertising campaign. I don't know if this would include local law enforcement agencies, but there is a component that would be using federal funds that would be essentially informing the public of this law change.
Representative Vogel.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more. In as much as those federal funds, I'm assuming, are now available, we'd be diverting whatever they're being used for now. Curious what they're being used for now. And if indeed they're being used properly, then are we diverting from something that needs to be done, or are they just kind of hanging there and not necessarily being used? Probably to the test, to the author.
Representative Hornstein.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Vogel, if you look at page 10, I believe that sentence that said these costs would be covered with existing carryover funding in our federal 402 funds, I think that might address your concern here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically, we have not used the federal funds, and we're just going to be using them now that this comes out.
That's my understanding. Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, that's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
From the fiscal note.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. Just kind of pursuing that same line of questioning then, Mr. Lee, how much is in that federal 402 fund? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, specific to this legislation, it is $700,000, but I defer to the agency in terms of how much they're receiving in total from the fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lee, do you know, could we use those federal funds to help fix Menlars?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I would imagine that there would be some federal requirements on how those dollars are spent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we should look into it. We're always looking for more help with Menlars.
You know. But it's not enough.
Every little bit helps.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, Representative Hornstein, any concluding
comments? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then if you have none, just the motion.
I wanted to thank the committee for hearing the bill. A couple of other thank yous, too. We have a few families that have lost loved ones due to distracted driving, and I want to thank them and all of the families that have been a part of this process over several years. They have really, I think, raised the consciousness of the legislature about the need to act on this issue and to act urgently. We also have 30 business organizations that have come out in support of this bill, and you know, we really appreciate the support of these business, civic, and nonprofit organizations and their advocacy. So the bill is popular, and I think the time has come for the legislature to pass this legislation. So with that, members, I would renew my motion that House File 50 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Yeah, thank you.
And next bill before us is House File 679, Representative Morrison. Members, by way of background, we passed this one out of committee the other day, and there was an error in the committee report. But in addition to that, there was a new fiscal note, which means that it will cost a bit less. So, Representative Morrison, would you refresh our memory then as to what this bill dealt with, and then we'll have a motion by Representative Olson to put the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for having me back. House File 679 addresses an urgent need to assure funding for children's residential mental health services for May and June of this year. State funds were appropriated in the 2017 budget passed in the special session to sustain children's residential mental health services in anticipation of an IMD designation by CMS. Unfortunately, for the math to work out for the special session agreement, 2 months of the biennium, May and June of this year, were left unfunded in anticipation of funding those two remaining months in the 2018 session. Though there was bipartisan agreement to fund those last 2 months, the funding was vetoed as part of the omnibus spending bill last session. So now the issue is timing. Children and youth needing this level of care, their families, counties responsible to place them for treatment, and service providers all need reassurance that the state will continue to keep its commitment and provide the needed state funding to assure services can be delivered yet this spring. Passing the needed $368,000 early in the session sends a signal that serving kids in need of intensive mental health treatment is a priority. The fiscal note previously had been $470,000. Okay. So $102,000 extra dollars.
We'll find a place for it. thank you, and I apologize for bringing you back a second time, but sometimes things unfortunately happen. And
not at all, Mr.
We did have an error, and... But the other good reason to have it before us is the change in the fiscal note. So, Representative Olson.
Yes, I move that House File 679 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in. Oh, that's right. Now we haven't moved the amendments yet. Now we have the bill before us. Representative Olson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
Okay, the amendment is now before us. We don't want to make the same mistake twice. Okay, any discussion on the amendment? That basically puts the appropriation before us and reflects the changes that were just discussed, where it goes from $470,000 down to $368,000. Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We now have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Do we need to vote on it? The bill itself.
Yes. We're going to move the bill now, or restate the motion on the bill as amended.
Okay. Great. I will renew my motion that House File 679, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
We've adopted the amendment. And now, we did, didn't we? Yeah, okay. Any discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, now we go to House File 548. And Representative Torkelson, I talked to you earlier. This is the renaming of a bridge, a new bridge, formerly the Eisenhower Bridge. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 548 recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, we needed the one of you, either Representative Hornstein or yourself, to move the division report.
So do I need to do that first?
Yeah, that's to get before us, then move the bill.
My little cheat sheet didn't tell me that.
Okay, Representative.
But I can do that.
Hornstein, you want to move the division report?
Sure. I would move the Transportation Finance Division report on House File 548.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Now, Representative Torkelson, your cheat sheet is before you, and you want to make the motion.
I'm happy my cheat sheet is now in order. I move House File 548 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you'd care to present the bill, Representative Haley.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 548 is a simple bill about renaming a span of bridge between Minnesota and Wisconsin along the Mississippi River by Red Wing and Bay City, Hager City. This came to me about a year ago from a group of veterans after the city council was considering renaming the new bridge as it was under construction. The bridge will be ready or completed this fall. This does not have a fiscal note. And so I'll stop there, and I have a testifier here if you have any questions about the background or the history on the name Bridge of Valor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, if the witness would care to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I represent a much larger body of veterans and citizens who are extremely excited and invested in this new name on both sides of the river. We have collected endorsements from local organizations, national organizations, and people are very much looking forward to this statement of valor covering our military, our veterans, past, present, and future, our law enforcement, firefighters. We feel like it's a timely statement in our country right now, and it's a positive statement.
And if you could identify yourself for the record, ma'am.
I apologize. My name is Jane Draskowski.
Jane Draskowski. Everybody's looking over at Representative Draskowski. Is there a connection?
She's got a great name, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. And we've got Representative Scott.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if there's no fiscal cost, why the bill is in our possession. Mr. Marks is making
a move.
I think
he's prepared to respond to that question. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott and members, there is a fiscal note with the bill that shows the cost would be about $1,000, but there's no. It will only be done if that $1,000 is collected from non-state sources. So it's essentially no cost to the state. Those supporting this would have to raise the $1,000, and then Department of Transportation would change the name and spend that money to change the name.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I speak in opposition to this bill. I like Ike. I really don't know why we would be changing an Eisenhower Memorial Bridge. I have no clue, but and my credentials on veterans, I would say, is quite good. But I think we need to think this through a little bit. Mr. Chair, maybe if I could ask a question of the author.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Haley, is the city on board with this? Do you have a resolution from the city?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, thank you for the question, because there is quite a background on this. So I'll give you a brief background. When the new bridge started under construction, the city started this effort of gathering all kinds of constituent groups, artists, poets, veterans, et cetera, and their process of renaming was going to take a year and have all these committee meetings and everybody have a voice. In their discussions with MnDOT about the construction and the renaming, they realized that they didn't have to rename the bridge, and they hadn't understood that originally. But this process had already begun. So at that point, the city said to the residents, we are not going to lead this process, and if you have interest in continuing, you can contact your state representative, because it would be state statute to change the name. And that's how the group of veterans that we're meeting came to me, and we're working on the idea of the Bridge of Valor. I'll have Ms. Draskowski talk a little bit more about that, but to your point on the city, so the city, again, supported this and started this process. They are meeting next week on the 25th at a council meeting to vote on a resolution in support of. So at this point, we haven't had opposition, and I should have a resolution next week.
Well, thank you, Representative Haley and Mr. Chairman. I think I've got an idea where everybody could win on this thing because, you know, usually a lot of times these renamings just go through. But I like Ike. What can I say? What if it was renamed the Eisenhower Memorial Bridge of Valor?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I'll let Ms. Draskowski speak to that, because that has been discussed through this process, that possibility.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, I think my idea is brilliant, and the bill could fly through. Eisenhower Memorial Bridge of Valor.
Ms. Draskowski.
That only makes sense.
Thank you, Mr. Representative and Mr. Chair. I have a statement from a national organization called Legacies Alive that was started by a Navy SEAL and an Army Ranger, and their statement kind of encompasses what we're trying to do. They say, we understand that the bridge's naming has become a point of curiosity and attention. President Eisenhower served our country with the utmost honor, and his involvement in and its original naming is without question. However, we strongly believe that the state should not just recognize one person's service to our country, but rather the collective action of all our fallen heroes, Gold Star families, veterans, and active duty service members. The Bridge of Valor title includes each of those groups and will ensure each of their sacrifices is recognized.
Representative Davids?
Well, I think that my name encompasses everything. It's much better. And so what if, can we make an move for an amendment right now, or would that be out of order? Of course, I'm usually out of order, but...
Well, Representative Davids, we do have a requirement that amendments be offered in advance so that they're posted. Perhaps that would be best for the House floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I chaired committees, I never had any rules. So, but that's fine.
Representative Davids, I served on your committee. I understand fully. I like Ike. There's some of us on this committee that may be old enough to remember that, but that was the campaign slogan in both the elections that when Eisenhower was running for president of the United States, the campaign buttons were I like Ike. So that's what I assume Representative Davids was alluding to. Representative Liebling. He was president.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had raised my hand before Representative Davids, and I have to say I was going to say something very similar. I could well understand the name Bridge of Valor if this was a bridge that was unnamed. But I also was just had raised my hand to ask why in the world we would replace a bridge named after General and President Eisenhower, who, you know, served at a very important time in our history and is certainly worth remembering. So, I mean, just my own personal take on the name Bridge of Valor is that it doesn't necessarily tell anybody anything if you don't already understand what it refers to. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to the name. In fact, I think Representative Davids actually is proposing something that would be, you know, quite a good compromise. So I just wanted to... it's such a rare situation where Representative Davids and I agree on something. So I just thought I would say that I was thinking along the same lines and really had the very same question. So thank you, Representative Davids.
Representative Davids, I could reconsider. I didn't rule your amendment out of order. I just gave you the history that we try to have the amendments in, and there is a bit of a loophole there that if there's a discussion with the chair, which we just had, if you would care to write out your amendment so that it's in writing, maybe we can entertain that. If there seems to be rather broad consensus that maybe that would be a way to go. An awful lot of people like Ike. Representative Davney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I now am speaking against the approaching amendment. I want to thank the community for reconsidering the name of the bridge. It's been the President Eisenhower Bridge for a long time. You're replacing the bridge. And I think it's an opportunity for each generation to choose who and how and what they want to honor and respect. Certainly the actions of military veterans are worthy of that. That doesn't detract from the memory of President Eisenhower. He remains a man of great stature in our history, but I think it's actually healthy for us to reconsider the names of bridges and roads and all those things that we name and allow each generation a new shot at it. And I say this as the legislator who represents, I believe, the Sri Chimnoy Peace Bridge, which I certainly would be open to renaming at some point. So Godspeed, Representative Haley.
Thank you.
Okay, we have... Representative Torkelson next. And by the way, David's name was twice on the list, Representative Liebling. He was there, and then you were there, and then he was back on the list. He just raised his hand twice, I guess. So we try to take people in order as best we can. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the author. This bridge crosses a state border. Does Wisconsin like Ike?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, thank you for the question. That as well has been an interesting process. When the city started this, they were working with the Wisconsin folks and as well as the Wisconsin legislature. And they came to the conclusion that Wisconsin names it on their side and Minnesota names it on our side. And the folks in Wisconsin don't necessarily refer to it as the Eisenhower Memorial Bridge. They call it the Highway 63 Bridge, I believe. There's people on the Minnesota side that don't call it the Eisenhower Memorial Bridge. It's just the bridge. And there actually is not a sign anywhere, nor has there ever been a sign that says Eisenhower Memorial Bridge. And other people told us it won't matter what you rename it. We'll just call it the new bridge. So this is kind of beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I think.
The bridge formerly known as
the bridge formerly known, yes. This broad group of veterans is very committed and passionate about valor and what valor means across, again, past folks that have served our country and folks in the future. So we're trying to kind of encompass a lot of people's ideas around this bridge. I appreciate your comments.
Representative Pawlowski, and maybe you could enlighten us on what the bridges are named between Winona and Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, I was at the dedication of the bridge. My first grade class from St. Joseph Elementary School, Catholic school, was there because Meredith Anderson stood next to President Eisenhower as he dedicated the bridge, and she was related to Ambassador Anderson at the time. I recall that we all got to shake President Eisenhower's hand, and that it looked like the entire town was there. So when Representative Haley asked me to sign on to the bill, I said no for the same reason Representative Davids did, because I like Ike, and I got to shake his hand.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. I think is the first bill you've had before the committee, is ask the author for advice about the amendment. Do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am open to the suggestion. I'm not quite sure on your process, Mr. Chair. One option maybe is I could bring the suggestion back to the wide group of veterans that have been working on this for a year and get some feedback. And also I could get some feedback from the City Council at that meeting next Monday if there would be an opportunity postpone your decision today and come back before Ways and Means in a week after that happens. I am open to that process.
Okay. And I think maybe the best way to proceed on that question would be if the amendment goes on, this isn't the last stop, and you could have that discussion, and then when the bill is before the House, if an amendment was necessary, it could be proposed there. That would save your having to come back to Ways and Means. Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to defer to the author, and this is, I think we've got some support here to put it on, but I think maybe it could use some more discussion and let Representative Haley do her homework. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll withdraw my amendment this time, but it will be back.
Okay, the amendment is withdrawn. Any further discussion on the bill? Let's see, that was moved by Representative Torkelson. Would you care to renew your motion?
Thank you. I would renew my motion that House File 558 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
548.
I'm sorry. 548. There's a mistake in my cheat sheet, Mr. Chair.
It's 548.
We got to submit this to you for.
Okay.
I'll go with 548, Mr. Chair.
Okay. That's probably the best one to go with right now. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The next bill before us is Representative Nash's bill dealing with Trunk Highway 25 in Carver County. and that came out of Representative Hornstein's division.
You want me to move?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the Transportation Finance and Policy Division report on House File 1171.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hornstein? Or Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1171 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Nash? Anybody, it's a fairly simple bill. I guess you're going to try to find Representative Nash. But Representative Torkelson, I assume came out of transportation. You probably have some background on it. It's simply a renaming. I don't think it involves any complexity beyond understanding perhaps who it's being renamed for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On behalf of Representative Nash, I'm happy to present this bill. I think you're correct that there is no conflicts of historical names and have any correlation to this bill. It's a fairly simple bill, and I would encourage folks to vote green.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, if you'd care to renew your motion, Representative Torkelson.
Yes, I renew my motion that House File 1171 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have House File 142 by Representative Lesh, who just entered the room. Representative Lesh, you're right on time.
All right. Perfect. Just in time inventory.
And Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Veterans and Military Finance and Policy Report on House File 142.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 142 be recommended to be referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Lesh, if you could give us a brief overview of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 142 says that counties have to pay differential pay for their deployed service members. And most municipalities, local units of government in the metro area pay this differential pay. The idea behind it is that if you're a public employee and you go to serve your country, you should not be taking a pay cut, risking your at-home finances or even your home when you deploy. As a commander in the infantry, one of the major things that we had to deal with is when soldiers deployed, we needed their attention focused 100% on the mission. And there were always challenges to that. So if they had, let's say, family problems at home, I remember one of my drill sergeants referred to it as baby mama drama. That was an issue. And it took your attention away from the mission or the training, and so commanders wanted to reduce that as much as possible. Another major factor was finances. If you were deploying or you were away on training and you were losing money and you were starting to get phone calls saying, hey, I just got a repo notice or I got a notice from the mortgage company that they're going to take the house, your focus is not on training. There are several soldiers deployed, actually two of them right now, in Operation Spartan Shield in Kuwait, who work for Ramsey County. Ramsey County is one of the few counties that does not offer differential pay for deployed soldiers. In this case, we have the donut hole of the situation where these prosecutors receive more money when they're working as a prosecutor than they do as an 03 or an 04 deployed in Kuwait. One of these soldiers is in danger of losing her house, and that's wrong. We can't have that. I attempted to work with Ramsey County for almost a year now in trying to get them to address the problem, and so far they have refused. And so I brought the bill. It's moving in the Senate, and
I hope you'll support it. I think the total cost you're looking at for them is like $30,000, $40,000 they could solve this with, but bureaucracy.
Okay, the motion is before us. The bill has been presented. Any discussion? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing the bill, Representative Lesch. I'm noticing here, so two things. One is this appears to be an unfunded mandate for the counties. Are they kosher with this? They've been telling me about unfunded mandates for the last 10 years, and we continue to do things with that. The other question is, I see that it largely some of this did apply to schools before. Now you're applying it to counties. What about cities, townships, other units of government? Is that bill number two next year?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, first, it absolutely is an unfunded mandate. No question about it. We're telling counties that they have to do something. I feel that in this situation, it's absolutely warranted. And that if we have public employees who are leaving to serve, that we can't have them losing their houses. And so there may be a philosophical difference on that, but yes, it's an unfunded mandate. I'm not gonna mince words on that. Your question with respect to other units of local units of government, I can tell you that, like the city of St. Paul, for example, offers differential pay. City of Minneapolis does, and the major users of that are police and fire. So. The problem that I'm trying to solve is for these deployed service members right now, that are one of whom stands to potentially lose her house. That's the problem I'm trying to solve. She works for the county, and I'm trying to solve this with a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. Maybe it's worthwhile saying that all municipalities should, but in this case, I wanted to solve the problem for the counties, and that's why I did it.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lesch.
Any further discussion? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing it forward, because I obviously agree that it's good to make up the difference. But I don't see any fiscal note. Has there been – there seems to be at least a local impact. I'm wondering if that's been requested.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, no, because it's local impact. So we can get local impacts notes around here, but, you know – I don't think one's been requested. And I think, well, I've only heard by rumor and innuendo we're talking about 30, 40 grand for Ramsey County, but I don't know that for a fact.
I have been involved in the past with local impact notes. And by the way, the minority lead on the committee could ask for one as well as the chair. There's a process. But my experience has been that we would probably be back the next January before we would finally get the local impact statement. They're very slow in coming. They really don't work very well if you need information during a legislative session. At least that's been my personal experience. Any further discussion, Representative Vogel?
No, thank you.
Okay, seeing none then, if Representative Eklund would care to renew his motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will renew my motion that House File 142 be recommended be referred to the Government Operations Committee.
The motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
And that concludes the bills, but we do have an announcement. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 13th. 2019, from 11:30 to 12:35. We'll probably have two bills before us that day, and if we don't get them both done, we'll meet immediately after session, and it's going to be in room 120 in the Capitol. And one of the reasons we're going to be in 120 is that that'll be just before a floor session that we possibly will have. I don't think that decision has yet been made, but if they do have a floor session, it's my understanding that the Senate is meeting, and so we may choose to meet and do some paper shuffling like we did last week. So at any rate, if you can mark that on your calendars, and then if the floor session were to stretch out, I'll make an announcement. The caucuses meet at 4:15. And we don't want to overlap on the caucuses. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just restate that day and time again?
The day and time, it'll be March 13th from 11:30 to 12:35, and then we will adjourn if we've completed the agenda. Otherwise, we will reconvene immediately after the session to complete the agenda, and that's in room 120 in the Capitol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, if there are no further questions or comments, meeting adjourned.